He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. Psalm 91. Good morning. Happy Sabbath. Thank you. It's good to be back home. Every time we take a vacation, we learn some things. I learned something. I was golfing around 3 o'clock. In, of all places, Palm Desert. And I was by myself, because who would want to go golfing at 106 degrees? But it felt good. I was by myself, and then I said, I'm going to try something. I looked around, there was nobody there. And I took out my glasses, and I put them on. And I said, oh my. I just went from snowy TV to high definition. My, and since there's nobody around, I said, I'm going to leave them on. And you know what? I like high definition. So I'm going to leave them on. I'm going to leave them on because it looks a little bit better. Now, are we on or do I have to turn this on? Oh, we'll just wait for it to get warmed up. Anyways, it's good to be back home. We were away for a couple of weeks. Sabbath, I don't know what your custom is, but our family, whenever we go on vacation, we do not like to miss worshiping with brothers and sisters in Christ. So wherever we're at, we try to find a church. Whether it be close by or whether we have to drive, we want to be with our brothers and sisters in Christ. And the 17th, is it still searching? It's still searching. Let's see if we could do something here. It's on. Okay. There. The 17th, we visited a church. And we worship with our brothers in the Iglesia Adventista del Séptimo Día Hispana de Loma Linda. I suppose you want translation for that. It's the Loma Linda Seventh-day Adventist Hispanic Church. And here, I don't know, maybe you could see, we had our Sabbath picnic lunch there in one of the parks in Loma Linda. It was around 104 that afternoon. So we tried to find a little bit of shade, and we worshiped there. The next Sabbath, the 24th, we worshiped at the... It's somewhere here. Here it is. We worshiped at the Palm Desert Oasis Seventh-day Adventist Church. I thought it was a really neat building. They have the Three Angels message, the sculpture there. Inside, it was a really big open space church. I think it would seat around, oh, maybe 350, 400. And it was a beautiful church. And afterwards, we went out for our Sabbath hike there in the mountains of Palm Desert. Their mountains are a little bit different than the mountains here. That's it. Lots of those all the way around. We're trying to find something green, but good luck. We walked for a little bit, and that was around 107 that Sabbath there in Palm Desert. You can't see the contrast here, but here are the mountains, and it's all barren and rock. But here, palm trees and green grass and everything. And you know, I was just thinking about that because where there's water, there's life. And Jesus said, I am the water of life. And if we have Jesus in our life, it's not going to be a barren mountain. Our life is going to be lush palm trees. It's like a beautiful oasis with Jesus in our hearts. And so I just wanted to share that with you of our vacation. And I was thinking, you know, September 11, other than the tragedy that happened here in the United States for church, what's September 11th? It's 9-1-1. What's going to happen September 11th? The evangelistic meetings, that's the first night, is the first evening, 7 o'clock at the Kids Unlimited building. And you know what we're doing as a church is doing the work of God. Doing the work of God. The meetings with Pastor James Robbins, I'm inviting each one of you to attend. You will be blessed. You will be changed. Do all you can to be here. But the meetings are in preparation for the Brian McMahon meetings. And so we are, in a sense, doing the work of God. And this morning I wanted to share something with you because Nehemiah had a similar experience doing the work of God. Just a little bit of background. Really quick, Nehemiah, a lay person, he was a prophet of the Lord. He went back to Jerusalem. When he got to Jerusalem, he asked the king there, and let me just read chapter 1, verse 3 from Nehemiah. It says, "And they said to me, the survivors who are left from the captivity in the province are there in great distress and reproach." And then he says, "The wall of Jerusalem is also broken down, and its gates are burned with fire." Now, Nehemiah was written sometime between 400 and 433 B.C., all right? Sometimes it's hard to pin down where the books were written, because I wasn't there to ask them, and neither were you. And so somewhere on there, Nehemiah comes along, asks the king, "King, can I go and repair the walls with my people?" And the king grants him that request. He goes, "Go right ahead and do." And chapter 3 is about him and all the people rebuilding the walls. Now, note one thing. The nation of Israel is not the nation that it was before. It's just a handful right now. And for the most part, they are discouraged. They are sad. You know, their beloved city, the walls have been torn down and the gates had been burned. So they're really, really down. And Nehemiah comes with this plan to go and rebuild the wall. And I want you to open your Bibles because we're going to... Nehemiah chapter 4. Nehemiah chapter 4, we'll begin reading there on what's happening here. Because remember, they're building the wall right now. They're doing the work of the Lord. And here's what's happening. Nehemiah chapter 4, verses 1 through 6. "When Sambalat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became furious and he mocked the Jews. He mocked the Jews before his colleagues and the powerful men of Samaria and said, 'What are these pathetic Jews doing? Can they restore it by themselves? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they ever finish it? Can they bring these burnt stones back to life from the mounds of a rubble?' Then Tobiah the Ammonite, who was beside him, said, 'Indeed, even if a fox climbed up what they were building, he would break down their stone wall. Listen, our God, for we are despised. Make their insults return on their own heads and let them be taken as plunder to a land of captivity. Do not cover their guilt or let their sin be erased from your sight, because they have provoked the builders.' So we rebuilt the wall until the entire wall was joined together up to half its height, for the people had the will to keep working." Now this morning, I'm going to share with you from Nehemiah 4 some obstacles when doing God's work. Nehemiah faced them, and you're going to face them. Or you have faced them, or you are facing them. So Nehemiah chapter 4, Nehemiah comes along. Nehemiah was the key agent. He was the one that was moving the people and just encouraging the people to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Now remember one thing, the walls represented something. It represented security for the people. But what was important was not really the walls. What's important was it's what is inside of the walls. If you're a homeowner, what's more important for you? The walls of your home or the family inside the home? I hope it's the family inside the home. I hope you don't care more about the stucco or whatever you have, a siding. I hope your family is what's really important to you. So Nehemiah, he was the key agent for doing this. He was one of the key leaders also, not only of rebuilding the structure, the walls of Jerusalem, but he was the key leader of also rebuilding the spiritual life of the people. And you know, we by the way, my family and I worshiped in this the beautiful church that I showed you. But like Dorothy said, there's no place like home. I'm glad I'm back home. I'm glad to be back with you. We have a beautiful church. But what's most important is the people inside the walls. We could have the most beautiful church, outwardly speaking, but if the people inside, the spiritual life, is not where it should be, then what's the use of the beautiful exterior? And so Nehemiah rebuilt the spiritual life. And he also gives us an example on what to do when facing the obstacles. Now, here's five challenges that you will face. You could find others, but I'm just going to share five of them with you. When you are doing God's work, because you should have been doing God's work by now. If you have not, I ask one thing of you: to begin to pray for the people that you're going to invite to the meetings. Begin to pray. Begin, if you haven't yet, to do God's work. Here's the first challenge. You will face ridicule. All right? Verses 1, 2, and 3. This is what it's Sanballat mocked the Jews before his colleagues and the powerful men of Samaria. Now, Thomas Carlyle called ridicule the language of whom? I didn't hear you. The language of whom? The devil. Language of the devil. And Warren Wiersbe says some people who can stand bravely when they are shot at will collapse when they are laughed at. In other words, we are willing to take a bullet for Christ, but we are not willing to be mocked by somebody else or made fun of somebody else. And I think that's the reason why when we were young, we used to walk to church. It was, I would say, maybe a mile to church. And, you know, we carried our Bibles. And for a young person to carry their Bible, people laughed at you. They probably thought, there goes the holy rollers. So when we carried our Bibles, you know, I knew there was a reason for my suit. Some people are willing to be shot for Christ, but not laughed at for Christ. You will face ridicule. This one thing that in the passage, you will note that scorners, those that laugh at you, they need friends. I mean, if someone's going to make fun at you, for some reason, for the people that's making the joke or mocking you, it's better when they have a lot of friends behind them laughing at you. It's sort of like the support group. And verse 2 says, before his colleagues and the powerful men of Samaria. They were making fun of those that were building. The attacks will be personally. What did they say? What are these pathetic Jews doing? When do you get a little bit more angry? When they attack possessions that you have, or when they attack you as a person? When it's personal. You know, and some people that like to do that, they come to you and say, don't take this personally, but. What does that mean? Well, they're going to attack you personally, right? But they just told you don't take it personally. It hurts when you attack personally. Pathetic, the word used there, literally what it means is to be weak, feeble, withered away. So if somebody came up to you and said, you pathetic Christians. Oh, but don't take it personally. And the men, the powerful men, this is what they were doing to the people, to Nehemiah, those that were building the wall. Now, the attacks were against their competence. Can they restore it by themselves? Now, we know that they did it. It took them 52 days to restore the wall. That was quick. 52 days. So did they prove something? Can they restore it by themselves? You know what? I think they didn't do it by themselves because God was with them. And when God is with you, everything is possible. You will face ridicule. It attacked their perseverance. Will they offer sacrifices? I mean, the whole object was to rebuild the walls, rebuild them, and then begin to do what they love to do, and that is to serve God. The perseverance was for them that they will get together sometime, someday, and be able to sacrifice again. They attacked their enthusiasm. Will they finish in a day? I mean, they were mocking them. It was sort of like sarcastic. Are they going to be able to finish in a day? Well, it took them 52 days, but still, that was a lot shorter than what it would have taken them because they had the enthusiasm to do this. They even attacked their building materials, discussing, can they bring the burnt stones back to life from the mounds of rubble? What did they have to work with? The rubble that was on the ground. Now, burnt limestone. I've never worked with burnt limestone, but burnt limestone is very, very weak material. But if you read the passage, chapter 1, and also read chapter 4, you will notice that it says one thing. It says that it was the gates that were burnt down, and the walls were knocked down. So the material that they were using was not really weakened at all because the walls were knocked down and the gates were burned. Now, they also attacked their work product. Then Tobiah, the Ammonite, who was beside him, said, indeed, even if a fox climbed up what they were building, he would break down their stone wall. Ouch. Now, I know some of you are builders here. And if you built a wall and somebody said about, if a chicken stood up on that wall, it'll be knocked down. How would you feel? Would that be a compliment to you? Don't take it personally, but if a chicken stood up there, it'll knock down your wall. Even if a fox, you know, the walls were 9 feet thick. That's about the width of one pew maybe? A little bit less? A little bit more? Just like the date at the beginning, give or take a little bit? But it was a thick wall. And here they're mocking their work product, saying, oh, when you guys are done, you put a little fox on top of that, you'll break it down. Not a good thing to say. You will face ridicule. When the enemy, Warren says, laughs at what God's people are doing, it usually is a sign that God is going to bless his people in a wonderful way. Now, the question, as I read this, the question that came up to my mind is, sometimes we are so afraid of being ridiculed that we don't do what God has asked us to do. We rather not do what the Lord has asked us to do because people might laugh at me, because people might slam the door at me, because they're going to reject me. But listen, when the enemy laughs at what God's people are doing, it's usually a sign that God is going to bless his people in a wonderful way. Challenge number two, obstacle number two, you will face rage. When Sambalat heard that we were building the wall, he became furious and very angry. Now, the words that are used, there are two words for that mean furious and very angry, which literally they mean he burned with anger and was so upset he lost it. Have any of you in your life ever burned with anger and you have lost it? Well, this is what happened when Sambalat and the others heard. They just lost it. The New Living Translation says this: he became very angry and he flew into a rage. So you will face rage when you do God's work. When Sambalat, Tobiah, and the Arabs and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the repair to the walls of Jerusalem were progressing and that the gaps were being closed, they became what? Furious. They became furious. And this repairing process, the words that are used there is really, literally, they were being bandaged up. They were being healed up. Let me tell you something. When you begin to repair your spiritual life, Satan is not going to be happy. Satan is going to be furious. And he will do all kinds of things to stop you from repairing your spiritual life. And there's a chance for us to repair our spiritual life. It's coming this next week, starting in the 6th. And I could assure you that Satan is going to try to put emergencies. He's going to try to do all kinds of things to get you not to be here for that week, if you are planning to repair your spiritual life. Revelation 12:12 says, the devil has come down to you with great what? Fury. Because he knows he has a short time. So the devil is out there like a roaring lion. And sometimes the devil is not only out there, but he's in here. Unfortunately. And he's trying to devour anyone and everyone. But Psalm 2, 1 through 4, this is what it says. Because God is untouched by this rebel rage. Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain? It's a question. The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us. He who sits in the heavens laughs. The Lord holds them in derision. What does this mean? Don't be afraid that you're going to face rage from your neighbors, from friends that you're going to be inviting when you're doing God's work. Because God, it says, laughs from the heaven. Because you cannot have the rage. Vengeance is mine, says the Lord. Now, when you do God's work, number three, you will face resistance. Verse 8, they all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and throw it into confusion. They all plotted together. Who's the they? Well, Jerusalem was surrounded by enemies. The Samaritans were at the north. The Ammonites were at the east. The Arabians were in the south. And Ashdod was on the west. All these were enemies of Jerusalem. And they were surrounded. And they were facing resistance from them. They all plotted together, it says, together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to throw it into confusion. In other words, the special op here, the operation that these enemies had was to put Jerusalem into total disarray, total confusion. There was no goal. They weren't focused. You know, as I thought about that, the devil does the same thing to churches. The devil does the same thing to families. What's your goal? What's your goal in life? As a family. I mean, you just live and do things. We go on vacation, come back and work. And I mean, is there a goal your family has? But the same thing for a church. Why are we here? I mean, is it just to meet every Sabbath, come back Wednesday, prayer meeting, and have a few programs and continue this? What's our purpose? There must be a goal. We must be focused. And the devil, what he's going to try to do, because I believe that we, as Valley View Seventh-day Adventist Church, we're focused on bringing people to the feet of Jesus Christ. Now, the devil will come in and try to bring confusion into the church and make us lose our focus. How does he do that? Well, he brings little things in here, problems here, a little problem there, a big problem over there. Let's not let him do that. 1 Corinthians 14:33, for God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all churches of the saints. God wants order. He wants us to be focused. We have a purpose and a goal. Number four, obstacle, you will work the rubble. Verse 10, it says, in Judah it was said, the strength of the laborers fails since there is so much rubble, we will never be able to rebuild the wall. In other words, the walls were knocked down. All they had to work with was what? Rubble. I mean, I'd rather work with a nice square stone, you know, put them together. We went to Legoland. They had Legos for building their walls, you know. It would have gone a lot quicker. But they had rubble, little stones, odd-sized things. But they worked. And probably the people that were working, we could imagine, like the New American Commentary says, their lamentation. As the people were singing the restoration blues. Remember the blues? They are staggering under their load. The workers' strength is failing. Working around the rubble makes the task too much trouble. We're in over our heads. We won't be prevailing. We got those wall building blues. Can you imagine the workers just being discouraged because they have the rubble to work with? That's not a good thing. You will work the rubble. And when you do that, there's a point in every building project, every project that has to do with construction. I think we all hit this mid-project crisis. Verse 6, So we rebuilt the wall until the entire wall was joined together up to what? Half its height. So it wasn't full height yet. It was halfway. It was halfway. And when they hit halfway, they hit this mid-project crisis. And what happens in a mid-project crisis? Well, people become physically exhausted. Right? You get tired. The enthusiasm for the project is gone. Remember how you start the project? We could do this. Let's get started. Let's go, go, go. And everybody gets behind it. Midway crisis, everybody is not enthusiastic about the project anymore. Why did we begin this to begin with? Why did we start this anyway? And now who's going to finish it? I'm tired. The builders are tired. The ones that were supported financially, they're tired. It's a mid-project crisis. And then they see the end is not in sight. It was like, oh, we still have a long ways to go. It's a messy, it seems complex, and they begin to think that we are proven to be inadequate. We can't do this. It's kind of hard. Have you experienced that? The mid-crisis? And it happens the same way when we work for the Lord. You're going to start the project. What's the project? Is the evangelistic series. You're all excited about it. Hopefully you're excited about it. But there'll be a time when you're going to think, oh, I'm tired. I'm tired. What do you do? Well, I think number one is to get excited about the project again. Psalm 51, David says, restore to me the joy of your salvation. And when you restored the joy of your salvation, then he says, then I will go to the transgressors and share the gospel. So if you don't feel like, if you're tired, the Lord says he's coming, he hasn't come, what should we do? Ask the Lord to restore the joy of salvation in our life. And then we will be able to go and tell the transgressors. We'll be able to go and share the gospel. But get excited about the project. I'm not only talking about the project, but we have a project here, don't we? Have we hit mid-crisis? Let's get excited about the projects. Number two, don't get distracted by problems. I mean, like in a marriage, conflict is part of the marriage, right? Right? Okay. I'm just checking. You're still out there. I know you're looking at this new preacher that came from nowhere. But crises in a marriage happens. But we learn to communicate and we learn to resolve those times of crises, don't we? And it's the same thing with the church. Don't get distracted by the problems that we are experiencing at times. We need to be focused. You have feelings of inadequacy? Don't let them get to you, because the devil is going to keep pounding you. You can't do this. Why should you do this? You're not worthy of doing this. Oh, they're going to laugh at you. They're going to be upset at you. Don't go. It's easy. Just stay home. Don't take that brochure to your neighbor. Why? Well, if you take it, they might not like you anymore. We will never be able to rebuild the wall, some people thought. And with that attitude, are you going to rebuild a wall? No, you're not. You're not. Four, have fresh dependence on the Lord. Fresh dependence on the Lord. And I think one of the reasons why we are asking Pastor James Robbins to come is to help us to renew our faith and dependence on the Lord. Four steps to go through these crises. The fifth challenge, the fifth obstacle that the people faced when they were building the walls is that they heard rumors. Verse 11 and 12. And our enemies said, they won't know or see anything until we're among them and can kill them and stop the work. When the Jews who lived nearby arrived, they said to us time and again, everywhere you turn, they attack us. J.I. Packer wrote this, few, if any, churches lack friends of a sort who feel it is their special ministry to impart negative assurances of this kind and who never doubt their doomsaying is the most helpful contribution they could make. The factual information may, of course, be useful, but the gloom they spread is unbelief masquerading as wisdom. In other words, every church has friends or a special group that feel that it is their special ministry to impart negative things to the church. How do you know? Well, I've met them. And you've met them. And it starts something like this. Have you heard about the new things that are being taught? Or did you know? Every church has some type of friends. Even the children of Israel, as they were in the desert, Sister White calls them the mixed multitude. The mixed multitude was the multitude, it says, the Patriarchs and Prophets, page 316. It says, the mixed multitude had been the first to indulge murmuring and impatience, and they were the leaders and the apostasy that followed. This is right before Moses went up to get the commandments. It was during Moses was up there, and this multitude were the leaders in getting the whole nation to apostatize, to worship the calf, the golden calf. It's this mixed multitude that we're talking about. You will hear rumors. Verse 12 says, when the Jews who lived nearby arrived. Who were the ones that arrived? Who were the ones that arrived? The neighbors. Who were Jews? Who was building the wall? So the friends from within, they come and bring everywhere you turn, they will attack. What was the message? Who brought the message? The Jews. Their friends, their family. They were discouraging them. And you know, that is always the truth. Sometimes within the family is where the discouragement starts or begins. You will hear rumors. Mark 4:24 says, and he was saying to them, take care what you listen to. And this is a good text even for today. Because there will be a lot of doctrines that you're going to be hearing out there. Did I tell you that in General Conference, when they were talking about the doctrine of creation, there was an actual discussion about creation there at Atlanta, Georgia? They discussed whether the seven-day week of creation was literal or not. Yes. Yeah. So you will hear certain things. And the Bible is saying, take care to what you listen to. Take care. Take care. Not only should you be careful who you listen to, you should be careful who the people you listen to listen to. The wonderful world of email. You get a lot of emails. Did you hear? Did you know? Have you seen? Have you heard? It's truth. I checked it out. Here it is. Be careful what you listen to, who you listen to, and who are they listening to? Where are they getting their information from? There'll be a lot of those things as Jesus Christ's return gets closer and closer. So you will hear rumors. Verse 12, when the Jews who lived nearby arrived, they said unto us, how many times? Once? Time and time again. I mean, they kept on telling them, everywhere you turn, you will be attacked. You're surrounded. You have no chance to finish the walls. I mean, the enemies are going to... I mean, and these were their family. If we heard it once, they heard it more than they heard it more 10 times. Verse 12, when the Jews who lived nearby arrived, they said to whom? To us, time and time again. What does that mean? Notice, and we're sort of talking a little bit here about rumors. What is rumors? There's another word for it. Yes, thank you, with a capital G. Gossip. They said to us, notice they did not go to whom? To Nehemiah. They didn't go to Nehemiah and said, Nehemiah, I think, you know, there's a lot of people here and that want to attack you. And no, they bypassed him. They went to the people that were doing the work. In the church setting, it's the same thing. You know those people that have the special messages? And that the Lord talks to them? And they hear the voices? They don't come to my office and say, Pastor, I have a new revelation. You know where I hear it from? From you. Because, Pastor, did you hear it? Brother so-and-so came and he's sharing this around and passing out videos and things. As I have not heard. I have not. And the people here, they didn't go to Nehemiah or they didn't go to the responsible party of the military. No, they went straight to those that were working to what? For what? To discourage them. To put fear into them. And verse 12 says, when the Jews who lived nearby arrived, they said unto us time and time again, everywhere you turn, they attack us. Who's they? Who's they? You know, when you are being fearful about something, some people, we ask, what are you afraid of? And they're like, I'm just afraid. Of what? Of they. Who's they? You know, camp meeting, the pastors that work in primary, is sort of like an inside little joke between us. Because we talk about they. When we start setting up for a camp meeting, we leave things that they are supposed to come and pick up in the trailer. They will take care of it. You know who ends up being they? We're they. So within the pastors, we're doing things and we're like, oh, just leave it there. They will take care of it. They. And when we're done fixing everything up and it's almost time to get started Tuesday evening, Tuesday afternoon, they, that's us, we're running around taking care of what they should have done. They, it says, everywhere you turn, they attack us. Now remember, this is gossip, it's rumors that you will hear. So what were those five challenges? You will face ridicule. People will laugh at you when you do God's work. You will face maybe sometimes rage when you do God's work. Because the people that were working at the wall doing God's work in Nehemiah's time, that's what they faced. You will face resistance. You will face the fact that you have to work in the rubble. And you will face rumors. Now, it is not God's will, it says, that we do His work the easy way. Remember the easy way? Let me just remind you what the easy way was. Satan talking to Jesus, tempting Him, saying, why do you have to go to the cross to redeem all these people? You don't have to go to the cross. And you know what's going to happen. You know exactly what's going to happen. You're going to get nailed to a cross. They're going to beat you. They're going to mock you. I mean, you're going to be tortured, basically. But I'll tell you what. If you bow down just for maybe, 30 seconds would be good. If you bow down to me and worship me, I'll give you all the people that you came to redeem. I'll give them to you. That is the easy way. That was the easy way. But God, Jesus Christ, knew. He knew the scriptures. And He said, it is written. It is written. It is not God's will that we do His work the easy way. God's plan is for us to become overcomers, and overcoming means obstacles. Obstacles. At camp meeting, we do an obstacle course for the kids. And you wouldn't believe how many kids complain about the obstacles. Why do they get in line to do an obstacle course if they're going to be complaining about the obstacles? As Christians, we are running a race. And the race is not just a nice marathon, if there's such a thing as a nice marathon. But it's not just a marathon. It's not just something you run, and this marathon has obstacles, big obstacles. And in order for us to be overcomers, it means that we have overcome the obstacles. Ellen G. White, and it doesn't have to really directly do with what we were speaking, but she says, trials and obstacles are the Lord's chosen methods of discipline and His appointed conditions of success. As you do God's work, as we do God's work, we will face obstacles. But have the faith that God will help us to overcome those obstacles. You know the song that we're going to sing right now? It's titled, O Brother, Be Faithful. I won't tell you the whole story, but there was a gentleman that the Lord came and told him, push this big boulder outside of your house. Push it every morning. That's your job. Push it. And every morning he got up and pushed that humongous boulder. I mean, it was huge. And he pushed and he pushed. And year and pushed. Kept, it didn't even budge. And finally, he gave up. Why? Because the boulder didn't budge. After years, the Lord came back to him and said, why did you stop doing what I asked you to do? And he said, Lord, it didn't budge. It hasn't moved one inch. The Lord said, I didn't say anything about moving the rock. I just asked you to push. and be faithful. I often think that the Lord is going to come and ask us, you know, it didn't matter how many you brought or what you did, or that were you faithful in doing what I asked you to do? Oh, brother and sisters, be faithful.